Again. Okay.
So are we up out? We're alive?
Yes.
Oh, good.
May I ask a question?
More alive than ever. Please, Jenny, go ahead and ask.
Well, I think as some people got clearer, I think I got a little bit more confused, as especially about the difference between this and the pond. I had been this week. It's just was kind of quite astonishing because I pack a lot of emotion into one area of my groin, and I was amazed this week at, well, it's like what David was saying earlier, how hundreds of times a day, even in the course of a conversation, I could hear something, like somebody could tell me little bo peep, lobster, sheep, and I would start to get a little upset. And it, without really even noticing it, except that there would be this nice little sharp pain in my groin. And then I would go, oh, well, you're having an emotional reaction to this. So go ahead and don't try to put blinders on it. Have more compassion, or just, let yourself feel compassion about this situation, or let yourself feel whatever it is. And so, in that way, I could notice the discomfort, and I guess I was really mostly amazed at how many times a day I could notice this emotional reaction. But is that more the pond exercise rather than the exercise of this week? Was I not giving, surrendering to the emotion enough in order to move it?
I would say
No.
that's more the exercise of this week than the pond. I look at the pond as being more in our reaction to external events, and this one as being more working with the body and sensation.
Okay.
Yeah, let me make a comment, Jenny.
Sure.
First of all, the fact that you're starting to notice all of these emotional pains during the day, the many, 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 many that are occurring, is a sign of great progress.
Yeah, it seemed like waking up.
Well, exactly.
Or,
So
yeah.
don't forget, in this whole interaction here, we're just starting to establish new habits, right? So
Right.
one habit that you've taken on and have been willing to take on, you have the willingness and determination to take it on, is to observe the machine. And you start observing the darn thing, and you notice, my God, stuff's happening all the time.
Yeah.
And I know that during the course of this last hour, certain people have gone through very specific emotions. When you're working in group, those are the fresh fodder, in a sense, for the entire group to work with. That's real material that's very useful. And for the fact that it's dawning on you, and I go back to many weeks ago when Susan said, "My God, I'm realizing how asleep the machine is." Boom. So if we take the corollary of that, don't we see that as progress?
Sure.
Yeah? So, yay.
Psalmist said, my understanding, the pond, you watch the sensation, let it move through you without stopping or interfering. Radiating the pain is noting it, and instead of stopping it or cutting it off, we actually radiate it and spread it out, move it, use it.
Yeah,
And
movie
then
is it.
Silverdale, Al Townsend Girl liked that comment. Silverdale, great contribution, Jenny, to the discussion and clarifying the difference between the pond and radiating the pain. Also, Jenny, I wanted to comment that you've been working with that hip pelvic tension for quite a long time, and now you're working with it in a way where you can gain from your work with it. Before, when you were just trying to get rid of it and you were resisting it, and I kept telling you that it had an emotional origin to it and an origin in stress. Now you're watching the play of the different electrical and muscular impulses through the body, like in chapter one, and that's really good observation.
Well, thank you. And it's really kind of fun.
Yeah, it
It's fun watching just, I guess, the wonderment, I guess, that the body can be so responsive to a thought. Or I shouldn't call it a thought, an emotion.
No, it is a thought. It's you have a sensation in the body, and then you have a thought about it. That's the normal reactivity. That's the way we normally operate with the darn thing.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all there is to it. We just, oh, that's anger. Oh, that's pain. Or that's joy. Or that's good. That's bad. And we just run through that hundreds of times an hour.
Townsend Girl said, I think we get caught up in the exercises and forget that seeing the sleepiness is a step in the right direction too, which is a great comment. And then I said, some of us are still working diligently to distinguish the exercises to put them on a chart for y'all. And she said, oh, yay.
When we first I first did a practical work on self course, it was probably 15 years ago, and the course ran 48 weeks, where it was 1 week of discussion, and people in that class declared how they would do the exercise. They would say, this is how I'm going to do radiation of pain. I understand it so clearly. Here's the particular thing I'm going to do. Then they'd go out and work on that specifically for a week. And the next week's class, we would digest it for the benefit of the entire group. We did that course twice. We did it twice at 48 weeks each. Most of the people repeated that course. Why did they repeat it? Because of what Jenny said. Because as they were getting into it at that level, it was darn fun in an essential way to begin waking up and working so diligently. That's a lot of work. Those guys were there for 2 years. I dropped out at that point, and then a couple of people continued it for a while longer, a couple more years, I think. Okay? Is that it? Time to go home?
Shall we move into the next chapter?
There's another chapter?
There is the last hour of life.
Yikes. Scary.
Okay, I'm going to read the header. Chapter 24, Last Hour of Life. Know how to settle accounts. To know how to settle accounts every hour is something every man, and I presume women, should have to learn in school, just as to learn to breathe, to eat, to move, and to awaken the machine should be part of any genuine curriculum of education.
Just on a social note, which we don't normally get into, can you see how responsive, and if those of you have had children, how responsive children would be to some of the techniques that we're just dealing with right here? If, you know, maybe 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, you know, middle school age, they'd love it. Many of them would just love hearing this material and have it folded into the curriculum as such. And that would begin to change a few things in society.
They can really probably remember the doorway exercise too.
Well, it'd be a badge of honor. How would you like to discover just how precious life really is, but only in your last moment, just as the machine is taking its last few breaths? What would you learn about life? What would you appreciate suddenly that you had never really appreciated, maybe never even noticed before this moment? Almost everything else, above everything else, would be breath. Perhaps for the first time, you would notice that everything, every in-breath was accompanied by smells. And what exquisite smell. Suddenly you cling to the experience of every aroma. You notice that each scent is a combination of many different tones. And you may even be able, for the first time in your life, and also the last, to be able to separate and identify many of the individual tones and overtones which combine to produce what we call an olfactory chorus. Next, you may come to notice the physical sensations of the machine, and even though many of them may be painful, some will suggest by association all those wonderful experiences of the past, which suddenly seem so precious. Every movement of the machine may be its last, and you may be struck by the beauty of the machine's sensations, your attention following each movement and involuntary reflex of the body, intensely, thirstily, as the lover follows even the smallest movements of the beloved. So what is generally being discussed in those several four paragraphs there? What's generally happening? What has happened to the observer? When we're in that position, we have an enhanced attention, right?
It begins to awake to the immediacy of death.
Yeah, and we can see, we can hear the subtleties of tones so much better. Right? We can all know this.
Full engagement.
Full engagement, that's very nice.
Ginger Rogers or Molly, machine awakens in that space, adoration is natural reaction. Silverdale, the non-phenomenal self realizes that it is about to lose all of the wonderful faculties of the historical personality.
Yeah, and so we play, we suddenly, the tool belt, and we'll see this in HBM as well, Human Biological Machine. One of the great tools we have is adoration. And we begin to have this compassion for the machine. And then adoration becomes a way of life at that point. We sense the beauty of creation around us. We're not separated from moment to moment. we realize we're in the pool of creation. And there's a sense of beauty about that.
This is a little bit superficial, but I'm thinking about all the funerals where somebody may not be very well liked, and then after they die, everybody's standing around the grave remembering everything that they really love about him. It's kind of almost like that.
That's part of it. But the object this time, the person, the object is ourselves now.
Right.
So jumping ahead a little bit.
Just a second,
what is it?
Comment. Silverdale, the non-phenomenal self realizes that it will have to start all over again in a new infant body, which is ignorant of the world that it will be a part of. That's a great comment, because then we're once again in a position of being helpless and unformed and all the impressions being impressed upon us. And the historic self, we've developed it out of a sense of self-love in the first place. When we start learning to walk and start learning to be able to do things and start making choices, those are all small acts of self-love and self-adoration as we begin to control things. And then, hopefully we learn to release that control without releasing our appreciation.
So now we're looking at this. Suddenly we're in an enhanced, we see this enhanced type of attention. What is it that has really changed? You knew, and we know, all along that someday the machine would die. Why was this knowledge not sufficient to provide with the motivation to exert your will to awaken over the will of the machine to remain asleep? And now jumping ahead a little, now suppose that you somehow learned that you had exactly 1 hour to live. What would you do with this last precious hour on Earth? If you could use this last hour to complete all your business with the machine and with the organic world, would you understand how to do this? Would you be satisfied at your last breath that you had really done everything possible in life to complete your life to your own being satisfaction? And bouncing ahead a bit, in order to really have the freedom to live, we must settle all our business before we die, even in the final hour of life, if necessary. But how do we know exactly which hour will be our last? To be absolutely safe, we should settle our accounts with nature and with the machine at the beginning of each hour. Then death can never catch us by surprise. At the moment of death, we should have a presence, a clear mind and conscience, taking our last breath with definite satisfaction that we have done everything within our power to fully use our life. Day by day, if we should ever take the trouble to look, we will discover things which we have left undone, which are in need of repair. It is a mark of a real human being who has really lived that he has squeezed from life every possible drop of quality. We should strive to live our lives so that one day we can say at any moment, today I can die without regret. What do you suppose that means? Today I can die without regret. Anyone?
That you die in peace, that you don't have any affairs hanging.
You don't have affairs hanging, and you've lived your life in a particular manner, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, with good intention. There has been many times I've done myself that question, and obviously, honestly, because of my sleepiness and whatever state I am, always I could have done better, but at least I have done the best I could within my limitness.
During the last hour of your life, you may not have the choice over where you are or with whom, but you do definitely have a choice over the quality of the time, because it's you and you alone who determine the state of the machine, whether it is alive or dead at any moment, including that last. In the middle of the next paragraph, if you wish real quality of life, your life must be given up to the work for the greater good. For just your personal self, you can have very little. Working towards transformation of your being, not for your own benefit, for the benefit of the absolute, which is the same thing as saying for all beings everywhere, is an effective technique for evolution. And then on 180, EJ gives us some techniques. He says, look back at the last hour, which has just passed, which we can do, right? As if it had been your final hour on Earth and you have just realized you have died. First, ask yourself if you are satisfied with how you have just used this last precious hour of life. Are you satisfied with how you've used this last hour together? Now return to the stream of organic life and set yourself the aim during the next hour, if you live that long, to extract just a little more quality from life than you had during the previous hour.
Sin Hawk says he's not.
He is not?
Yeah.
Correct. Correct. Determined to awaken the machine just a little more, to have just a little more presence in the present, to have a little more inner fire. Open your eyes a little wider. By this I mean awaken the machine and bathe in its transformational effects. Be a little more brave than you were in the past hour. You can afford to have courage now that you know it is your last hour and you have nothing to lose. Of course, don't be foolishly so. But, you know, when I read this, I thought, and when you get to this age at 60, certain things start to drop away and it becomes a little bit easier to speak your mind, in a sense, and set your course, to set your sails in a certain way, because certain considerations fall off. And I keep wondering, what would it be like if this, in fact, was my last hour on the planet right now? How would I live this last hour? Would I live it in consideration of how other people thought of me? Would I can live it in consideration of hoping to garner somebody's approval? Would I live it in simple presence? How would I live it?
So there's a whole other conversation going on online. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I'm just going back. The non-phenomenal self realizes, this is Silverdale, that it is about to lose all the wonderful faculties of the historical personality. The non-phenomenal self realizes that it will have to start all over again in a new infant body, ignorant of the world that it will be a part of. Then, we heard that, the non-phenomenal self can only be supplanted by a vibration of being which remains conscious between lifetimes. And I said, supplanted? And Sinhog said, I also didn't understand the use of the word supplanted in this context. And so, Silverdale, the non-phenomenal self, which is in a diffuse state, can be crystallized into a permanent individual cosmic unit. This is the aim of all self-perfecting. And then there's some ahs and ohs. Silverdale, crystallized into a permanent vibration of being. I said, yet as it goes from life to life, how is this less permanent? Sinhog, so the body of habits becomes a real soul? I say, different state. Silverdale said, exactly, Sinhog. And I said, what is the difference between a real soul and an unreal soul? Silverdale said, the crystallized vibration of being is a body of habits which engenders conscious life in each new infant body. Townsie Girl said, certification. Sinhog said, uncrystallized. Silverdale said, a soul is a luxury which must be intentionally and consciously created during a lifetime. I said, then what goes from body to body? What are you calling that? Silverdale said, we aren't born with souls. We have the possibility of acquiring one through our own practical work on self. Sinhog said, the uncrystallized body of habits or essence. And I said, okay. And then Silverdale said, the body of habits of the non-phenomenal self, which remains ignorant of anything and everything apart from its own vibratory sensation. So, this is a definite point of view. Some believe that the soul is what goes from body to body and that we have a soul. And some believe that we need to create a soul. So what this conversation hinges on is how we define soul.
Is that caught up on the comments?
Just about one just popped up. Ginger Rogers, I call it the clear light in its raw state, uncrystallized, pure potential, underlying everything and everyone, no beginning or end. So what is it that between lives sets up the next lifetime and makes soul contracts or processes between lives, the things that have happened in the last life? Does that happen in the body of habits?
I have an example.
Okay.
How long have we been doing this course now? 24 weeks? Something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. 24 weeks ago, when we first started meeting, for some of you, it was the first time you were introduced to this material. For several of you, this is you going through the material another time. Have you made progress in your understanding of the sense of your of the machine, the non-phenomenal self? Is your attention more alive, per se? Is there more there now than, in a sense, was there 24 weeks ago?
Silverdale said this discussion is within the context of the last hour of life and how to best prepare for it. You know, good point, Sinhog. Yes, it is always good to go over and over stuff again. And Ginger Rogers' forepaws are both saying yes.
And what we've done is we've inched our way closer to more presence of the non-phenomenal self in our life, rather than being dominated by the historical personality and the sleeping machine constantly, as is the case for most machines. There's a little something new that has been given birth. We are creating a new habit. this last chapter is saying to us, here is a way, similar to the doorway exercise, to work this exercise, work this new model on an hourly basis. What if this was your last hour? What if this, right now, this evening, was the last hour and you knew that? And for some reason, it was important for you not to discuss that with anybody else in this class, but you knew that this was your last hour. That in itself allows you to cycle through and exercise the non-phenomenal self and the attention that arises from it, and exercise that function just a little bit more. And as we go on, we see on page 182, in each moment it is possible to extract, or starting with the first paragraph on 182, every single moment is an eternal part of creation. In each moment, it is possible to extract a finer substance, which we can call essence of life. Paying attention to the way we operate is a finer substance than being totally asleep to how we operate. So we're extracting more at that time. If we are successful in extracting the finer substances from these mere, more gross material substances familiar to everyone, then we must sooner or later pay something for them. This is called the law of equilibrium. We must eventually pay for what we extract of life. But to pay in the moment for our use of the moment is what we call real doing. In the beginning, we can only imagine what it is to do with the thinking, feeling, or moving apparatus, but eventually, with work experience, we find that real doing is pain in the moment, leaving nothing for the future. Jumping ahead, but take this warning, do not wait too long. Maybe this one last hour is in effect all that remains to you. I was traveling over the weekend and I met with somebody who, an old friend, who had recovered from a very serious cancer about 2 years ago, and it's come back. So it's come back, and she knows it has come back. But she is walking with this particular exercise on a day-to-day basis. Maybe this one last hour is, in effect, all that remains for you. And then jumping ahead, learn to use each hour to the fullest possible profit. Write a detailed plan for your last hour of life. By this little exercise, you'll be forced to sink your roots of mentation deeply into the whole question of the real value of life as a prisoner in the human biological machine, just to understand how to die. Do you want to catch up on the other comments?
A few. Townsend Girl said, it is certainly different for this beginner. And I said, how so? And she said, well, I'm often finding myself contemplating different exercises, as in, how do I do that pond exercise and trying to remember the portal exercise, contemplating my closet for the red-faced donkey exercise and trying to find conservative clothing, and so on. I think I do not like this chapter. Very overwhelming. And then there were several condolences on your situation with your friend.
To die forever to this world is an honor, which must be paid for by conscious labor and intentional suffering.
Okay, stop there for just a minute. To die forever to this world, what does that mean?
You are no longer of this world. We are of this world as long as we are driven by the hungers and personal egos that arose from our historical personality. We are a slave, and we honor the world when we live from that place. When we die from that to this, we die forever to this world. It's an honor which must be paid for by conscious labor and intentional suffering through the process of conscious eternal return. Look at life as a business in which time is money. Time literally represents the money of life. We are given a certain amount to spend and no more when we come into this world. Perhaps now we can see how stupidly we have spent much of it. Even your aim in life, just to relax, has been defeated. As a consumer of life, you have cheated yourself. All your life you believed everything was free. Air is free. Time is free. Suddenly you discover these are not free. That you pay dearly for the use of the machine. You pay with precious time. Every moment you are here, it costs something. One moment is the price of each breath. How can you ever recoup these losses? If you have spent all your money on vacations, nothing is left to you now but empty nostalgia. For years you have spent your time as if it were one continuous, endless allowance from your parents. Only now, after the family fortune has been spent down to the last penny, and you find yourself bankrupt, do you discover that you are forced to earn every hour of life. All your life, you were like a child, spending time, the money of transformation, like a newlywed. You will find many excuses not to practice this last hour of death exercise. The will and habits of the machine are very strong, but you can learn to do more and more once you begin. You can learn to do more and more once you begin. Think of your last hour of life as a great ballet for which a lifetime of continual practice is necessary.
Okay, Silverdale said, for the non-phenomenal self to become the center of gravity of our life experience by displacing the historical personality requires conscious labor and intentional suffering. We might talk a little about that. This is the reward of practical work on the non-phenomenal self. And Ginger Rogers said that friend would probably prefer not to be considered tragic. Someone was saying things were tragic. Or someone to feel sorry for. But it's natural to feel sadness at the bittersweetness of life in a finite body, the seat of the historical personality. Yes, good comment. Very nicely put.
I'll tell you, she fundamentally changed her life due to this, literally. I mean, everything changed. She just changed her fundamental method of operation. That's how she was able to leverage that realization. It's been a success for her.
Sometimes death is a healing that can't happen without it.
We all know subconsciously that our hours are numbered. We know that. We cannot, most of the time, allow ourselves to bring that to the surface.
That's because you're an accountant and you can deal with numbers. For me, I can't deal with the numbers part. Sorry.
And in this chapter, EJ has offered us that opportunity. It seems painful, but what if we could grasp that pain inherent in this exercise with two hands and hold on to it? And hold on to it till we can see that this is a portal for us to another form of life, a form of life that is a true ballet.
So we all have a different style about, like, some of us thinking that our days are numbered, that will be a motivator. And for me, I feel like my knowing that each breath could be my last is more visceral for me and connects with me much more. So if I think about the days being numbered, to me that's an abstraction. If I think about this breath that I can feel in my body, then might be the last one.
Whatever works for you.
Right, but I'm saying
The words are immaterial. If whichever one creates the leverage that helps you bring the presence of the non-phenomenal self into the present, that works.
What I'm suggesting is that we might each grope within ourselves and our experience and contemplate last hour of death and to find out what is leverage for us personally.
Sure, absolutely. That is what the offering here is in this chapter.
I ended up reading the chapter this week, and I thought about it a few times, and I really liked the part about when he was talking about imagine that if this were your last hour. And there were a few times when it made me appreciate things so much more, or made my intention in the moment so much clearer. Whether I was making music or just conversing with someone, or whether I was working on a project. And, I mean, I really liked it. It added just a whole richer dimension to my experience. So for me, what I've done with it so far felt very positive. And, all right, trying to search for the despairing part, because I feel kind of shallow about this.
No, that's beautiful what you're doing. You're leveraging yourself into the moment. That's what it's for. There doesn't have to be despair in it to do it.
Okay, good, because I thought, I felt so much more alive. I thought, no, this exercise is all about how to live.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Fundamental.
So Sinhok said different teachers have different beautiful ways of putting the awareness of death as our constant companion. And Silverdale likes your contribution, Jenny. Townsend Girl says, does not sound shallow, it sounds like enlightenment.
Oh, good.
I'd like to bring attention back to write a detailed plan for your last hour of life. So why would we want to do that?
Well, I want to note, first of all, that we're beyond the 8:30 time, and that we're kind of
you know, if people need to leave, they can leave, but we are over time.
Well, we can leave that as an open-ended discussion to be explored and considered what it would bring about inside each of us to sense into that last hour, and to writing a plan is a way of really contemplating it very viscerally and very personally. So we could certainly do that. There's a few things that we probably like to be able to talk about. I'm thinking of stopping the recording and just talking about the next week or two. What do you think, David?
Yeah.
Silver
Dust,
good idea, T. Everyone should draw up the last hour of their life for our next session.
Just real quickly on that point, Silverdale, we had a workshop on death and dying a few months ago, and I did a presentation on drawing up your death plan, your last hour of life plan, and it had an enormous effect. It was very interesting. So it's a good exercise to do.
So maybe when we meet for questions and answers next week, next Wednesday, we can talk more about this last hour of life plan.
Okay, good.